We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
And as promised, he is Odyssey Sports NBA insider Brian Scalabrine. Insider Call is brought to you by the Dell Technology Small Business Podference 2.0 podcast series, available on odyssey.com/Dell. Scal, what's going on, man?
Yo, you guys didn't bring my drop as I come in. What happened? What's the deal? I didn't hear the drop.
Rent's due every single day, Scal. Rent is due every single day.
I know what you mean.
For the Memphis Grizzlies last night, they wrap up a postseason appearance. Does that sort of make everything a success? Does that make today a success and this season a success automatically?
Don't you think they have to beat the Spurs? Like, don't you think they have to take that next step into heading in that right direction? If I told you they were, you know, they were 7-8 seed and they had, one game to get in, I would consider that a big time success. Even if they were to lose two, if they creeped up there and played the Lakers and then, let's say they played Golden State and you're like, okay, well, experience is what got you. But I kind of feel like you got to beat the Spurs and for it to have, one step to say it's a successful season. If not, it's an okay season. I think they made strides in the right direction. But their big thing is still consistency, right? Mm-hmm. I did not understand that third quarter the other night, and especially when the way that they were playing in the first. Like they go away from what makes them so good at times, and I think that will show in the playoffs. So they can answer a lot of questions. They can get, at least a win against San Antonio, if that's who they end up playing, which I think they are.
See, I wonder, Scal, I'm with you on a ton of that because you can't figure them out. Now, part of that is you're trying to work Jaren Jackson back in, but to me, Scal, and something we haven't talked about with you, the front office, and we're putting it on them because this couldn't have been on Taylor Jenkins. You waited 8 games until you put Jaren back in the starting lineup. And there was always going to be, after sitting out that long, like an adjustment period, right? You're moving Kyle Anderson from the 4 to the 3 and all that. And the idea that you didn't do it sooner, so that especially with what you had in terms of schedule, didn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. Did you get it from any point? A player like Jaren Jackson, where you're trying to get him as many minutes as possible with Ja Morant for the future, right? It's all about development. Did not understand not putting him in the starting lineup sooner, with the minutes.
Yeah, So you know what we did
last week because you said, is he starting in the second half? So we did touch on this with you a little bit.
Yeah. So diving into the minutes thing, right? And I do think with guys coming back from injury, well, first of all, there's two stages here. One, let's get your feet wet, right? You might not help us win games right off the jump, but you need to get out there so you can trend towards the fact that you can help us win games.
Yep.
The second is minute restriction. On the minute restriction stuff. Like, did you ever see the game where Kevin Durant came off and he came off in the, he didn't start and he came into the game in the second quarter, played 19 minutes at 28 points? I think there's some value to that that the NBA did not explore. I think it's an egotistical thing to start. So with the way that I would have done it is like try to get him to play what I would consider the most meaningful minutes and a way in which I can get as close to him playing his minute restriction, and then getting him in at the end of games, which I think that's valuable experience and importance. So, like not playing the first quarter would probably be the most ideal way to do that. So I'm not concerned this year with all the stuff, and especially with guys coming back. I'm not concerned with guys starting or anything like that. I don't think it matters that much. What I do think is what you mentioned. Like, how can I make my rotation so him and Ja can play together as much as possible?
Yeah.
And maybe that is – Ja goes in there, Ja comes out, Ja goes back, and then put Jaren Jackson Jr. in at that point, right, to match up the minutes as much as you can. Maybe even do that in the third quarter. There's a lot of experimenting you can do to get those two to play together because ideally, and you guys saw this with Conley and Gasol, ideally those two have one of the best two-man games that we see in the NBA. And that's what Conley and Gasol had at times. Those guys would go two-man games. Sure. At the end, Gasol would hit them. Conley would get buckets. Gasol would hit open threes or roll that short post. You want Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant to develop into that, because that's what you're going to need to win games. You're going to need like a go-to combination to get over the hump. So that's how I would have treated it. But I'm sure that those guys have, you know, the biggest thing is the master plan. But it did kind of throw them off a little bit for that stretch.
No doubt.
We are, of course, talking to Brian Scalabrine. He joins us every single day here on the show. I saw something, not every day, but I wish it was every day here on the show. but we saw today, I did read a piece up at ESPN sort of plotting out the futures, team power rankings for the next 5 years. And the Grizzlies came in at 12th on this particular list. They were behind several other teams in the West. Of course, this is the next 5 years, so you got your Lakers and your Suns, et cetera. Does that sound about right to you, sort of 12th in the NBA over the next 5 years?
It depends. The only way the Memphis Grizzlies get there is with incremental improvements. Those guys would all have to improve, like, you know, 5 to 10% coming into this offseason, heading in next year, and then continue to do that. I don't see them landing a big free agent. I don't know if is there a young player? You know, like Portland has Kobe Simmons on their team, and you know, you're like, okay, this kid could be really good one day. Like, is there anybody on their team that you guys are like, watch out for this kid in 2 or 3 years? Because I'm not sure I see one. I like their team, but I don't see any young up and coming guys who could, you know, like the Kawhi Leonard when he was with San Antonio his first year. Like, he barely played, you know, played and averaged like 7 points a game, but he ended up being like one of the NBA superstars. So I would think that each individual guy has to improve for them to be around that area. But that's a really good area to be in. That means that you're pushing to get to a conference final if you're a top 12 team, because anything can happen in the playoffs.
Well, we've been sort of working on the assumption, I'm just going to throw this at you, right, that Jaren is a special second player, that potentially, right, next to Ja.
Sure.
Where are you? Are you on that boat that he can be special?
Yeah, but I was also wrong with Wendell Carter Jr.
No,
too.
I feel you. Yeah, I feel you.
I'm exactly where you're at. Like, I just think he could shoot it. He's big. He's strong. He can handle it. He could pass it. I'm with you. He's new age big man.
Okay.
And he should be one of the better new age big men. But you know, like, is he going to be better than Anthony Davis? I'm not sure if he's going to be better than Anthony Davis.
No.
You know what I mean?
No. Right.
But that's kind of how I look at it. Like, he is, I guarantee if you, I put him ahead, I'd take him over Karl Anthony Towns in a heartbeat. And I don't even have to debate that with anybody. I would just walk away and say that conversation is beneath me. That's how much I think of Jaren Jackson Jr.
Well, if I was telling you next 5 years you want to win big and you got your choice of Ja Morant or Russell Westbrook, is that an easy pick with Russell being now the all-time triple-double? In terms of how he affects winning, does it depend on who's around Russ? Comparing his future to Ja's and kind of, you know, intertwining what Russ has done here, would you take Russ? Is that an easy one, or you like where Ja's headed?
Right now?
Yes.
Oh,
for the next 5 years.
No. And no, you know, I don't know. I don't know how Russ will age in the next 5 years, but no, I'd take Ja. But here's the thing, like, if you watched the Wizards lately, I love
I've
how
watched
they've
a lot
adapted.
Of them. Yeah.
It's great how they adapted their style. I think they're incredibly difficult to guard. They don't play any defense, and that's fine, but they get the ball out. They
Absolutely.
Hit Russ. And when he hits guys let the ball fly. So let's say that was what I would do if I was Memphis. I would say, well, here's the blueprint. We have our own version of Russell Westbrook. Let's get some shooting to put around him. And there's guys out there, by the way, like when Seth Curry signed with Philadelphia, the guy shoots over 44% from three, and they got him for like a mid-level exception. So there are guys that can knock down shots, and it's becoming more and more prevalent because people are growing up shooting the three and doing it more. So, you know, add a few shooters around Ja, and even Grayson Allen becomes a better shooter, just a more consistent shooter. You'll see Ja assist numbers go way up. So I would use that Russell Westbrook experiment as the blueprint.
Where's your respect level for what he's done? right, with the triple doubles, 182.
Off the charts, off the charts. He ain't even barely getting them. You can't even make the argument that he's chasing them anymore. When you get 17, you ain't chasing them. You're just getting them, you know. So you get 21 assists, you're not chasing assists. You're just getting them. But once again, I think it's like it was a total buy-in. Like, they weren't doing this at the beginning of the year.
Right.
It was a total buy-in to say, like, okay, what can you do? And it is clearly get downhill and find open guys. And what can we do to surround you? And they surrounded him with a bunch of guys who could shoot the three. You know, guys who would get exposed on the defensive end in the NBA game, which they do, but guys that can knock down shots, and that's exactly what you want. And I'm telling you, the Wizards right now are difficult to guard, because as soon as you hug up, I'm just going to bring three things up. One, there's no touching in this league. You can't guard, you can't hand check anybody. So you got Russell Westbrook, athletic as heck, coming downhill. You can't touch him. And if you help out on him, he's going to find the open shooter. That is really difficult to guard in the NBA right now. He's going to continue to impact the game as long as he's healthy and still playing at a high level. And he's gotten better as the season has gone along.
So it's going to, you're probably going to think, man, what is this fool talking about? But so 28, 13, and 21 assists last night. And I respect this guy. I respect the numbers, what he's done. I mean, we've never seen anything like it. There's no question about it. But then at the end of the game, you're down one, and he takes this step back three, or this three-pointer he pulls up at the end of the game, rather than going to the hole and using that athleticism like you just talked about and getting downhill and putting the pressure on a referee, you know, potentially to make a call. Like, the fact that Russ, at this point in his career, right, is making those kind of decisions when, you know, the three's never been his strength, you're down one to the Hawks, it didn't make that Russ, that kind of decision-making. I think that's the part that I look at him, Scal, and I say, are you ever going to win big if you're still making decisions like that? Like, I realize Beal's
right,
not
gonna,
out
I'm
there, but
hit
where
you
at?
With a question.
Please do.
Okay, I'm going to hit you with a question then. When LeBron got downhill against Miami and threw it back to Danny Green wide open for three, did you have a problem with that play?
No. That was the right play.
Oh, then you're in my boat. You're in my boat. So there's two and by the way,
I want to see the right play. Yeah, that's where I'm at. So
yeah.
I think we're in the same boat.
And you know there are people like that. So when you get downhill in the NBA, you're taking the decision almost out of your hands. You know what I mean
by
that?
In some ways.
If you get downhill and they put two on you, now you are leading it up to, I'm going to give the ball to a guy who I don't know who it is yet.
I'm with you.
They're going to crash. And then that guy's going to take the shot. Now, when you take the step back three, you control your own destiny. So me and you are the same. I think you get downhill because that puts the most pressure on the defense.
Yep.
You find the right guy and you live with the results. I never have a problem with LeBron making passes at the end of the game. And I know, by the way, you know there are people out there that do. So Russell
Absolutely.
Westbrook wants to, in his game where he broke the Big O's record,
that's
he wants
what
to control
he was
his
thinking.
Destiny.
Yeah,
that's
man.
But once you get downhill, you can't just throw the ball up there. Like, you have to make the right play at that point. But when you step back three, you know you can take that shot. And that's why a lot of guys settle on that shot, because they know they can control that. Once you get downhill and crack that free throw line, you have no more control over that. Now you have to – I mean, you could force it up, but then you get – I mean, you don't want to force the ball up on three guys. Now you're putting the game into someone else's hands. Now,
that's
if
true.
Brad Beal was out there, maybe
that's
he would have got downhill.
Yeah. That's a good point.
We are, of course, talking to Brian Scalabrine here on the show. Look, no 7 seed has ever won the NBA championship. We know that. A 6 seed did it back in 1995, but a 7 seed, no team seeded as low as 7 has ever done it. So do you think that means the Lakers won't be the 7, or do you think that means the Lakers become the first 7 seed to do it, Scal?
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking the field on this one, but it wouldn't surprise me if they do. But, you know, like, times are so different now. Guys used to care about the regular season. Now they don't. Not only do players not care, organizations don't care, coaches don't care, and fans don't care. It's mind-boggling to me. That's why I'm really pushing the fact that the guys who play should get MVP. The guys who play should get All-NBA team. Shouldn't give it to a guy that sits out 35% of the season. We should reward people who take the regular season seriously. And then when they do take it seriously, there's some financial incentives for, you know, playing in every game and having good numbers during the regular season. So, but my whole point of all that is, I'm sure LeBron probably could have came back earlier. And, you know, he's just like, what does it matter to me? I'll play this playing game, and then I'll get to the point where I could, I got to win one game, and then we can rock against one of the top two teams. I think I'd still pick them to beat the Phoenix Suns if LeBron is playing.
Okay, what happens with the Celtics now that Brown's gone? Scal?
Play in game, probably get in. If, let's say, lose that first game to Charlotte, mm-hmm. and then if they play the Wizards, they have not played the Wizards good this year at all, and the Wizards are playing much better, and the Celtics are playing much worse. So I don't know what happens, but I think they can beat Charlotte, though. I do think being at home and in one game, I think these guys, with their experience, I think they can beat Charlotte, but we'll have to see. It's put it this way, the idea – I've already booked my travel plans in about June, so I was going to wait until July. I don't know if they're going to be able to beat Brooklyn or Philly or even Milwaukee without Jaylen Brown. But I was high on the Celtics with Jaylen Brown, but, man, he brings so much defense to the team.
We, of course, talking to Brian Scalabrine here on the show. Always a pleasure to catch up with Brian Scalabrine. We were talking earlier today about Ja and just sort of you know, the load that he has had to carry this year because he hasn't had Jaren for the majority of the year. That being said, isn't this sort of what he's probably going to have to do for the rest of his career? I mean, when you are if you're trying to be a LeBron or you're trying to be a Steph or you're trying to be in that category with some of the greats, isn't this just sort of, you know, life in the NBA when you're an aspiring superstar?
Yes and no. So, what the guys that you mentioned, let's say Damian Lillard would probably be one of them, LeBron, use Chris Paul for an example, Steph Curry. Westbrook is not in this category, but I do think that to carry the load at an extremely high level, right, and bear with me here because it's like I don't some people can get offended by this, but you gotta be good at 60%. You gotta figure out how to impact the game when you're given 60. And if you need to raise up to 70 or 80, you gotta do it. And you gotta be able to drop down to 60. And then you go up to 90 when you need to in certain moments. That's like, and Dame Lillard does it at some times, but when he kind of drops off, maybe it's his size. Like, there are times where you're watching Dame Lillard for 10 days and you're like, oh my gosh, this guy's unbelievable. 60, 50, 40, 45, 60, 50. And then you'll see moments where he's like 3 for 19 from the field and he'll have like 17 or 12 points, you know, like not get to the free throw line because there's a wear and tear that it takes for him to have success in this league. So when Chris Paul can do it with his passing, LeBron can do it with his passing as well. You know, I would think like Steph Curry, he probably has to work really hard, but he's off the ball a lot more than Ja, if you think about it. But he's still working, don't get me wrong, but he's built up to that. The whole point of that is to be a major, major star and navigate an NBA season and get to the highest level of being an all-NBA, an all-star, and being able to still have something in the tank at the end of the game to affect the game or carry a team for a quarter but take your foot off the gas. You got to master all those, 60%, 70%, 80%, 90%. You got to master all of them. Those are things where I feel like Ja has mastered 80 and 90%. He's got to learn to be effective and really good and unstoppable and make people around him better. Even at 60, maybe Jaren Jackson Jr. can help him with that. You know, I'm just going to go into this two-man game real quick, and I'm gonna pick you apart with my passing, and I'm gonna do it for about the next 6 minutes just to get my breath, so I have a little bit to in the tank in the fourth. So when you start seeing Ja dominate quarters at 60%, and you'll know it, or maybe he doesn't. Then Ja will be the All-NBA player or the MVP type of candidate that everyone sort of hopes he can become. Luka Doncic also does it. James Harden has done it at times. You know, Kevin Durant can do it. Like, so it's all about being good at all the aspects of your effort, and that's important in the NBA.
So last thing we got for you, a little bit later on, we're going to be doing this draft where we're picking a sports franchise that we'd pick right over the next 5 years. Whether it's right now and going to stay at a high level or going to blow up over the next five. If I was pinning you down to the NBA franchises, next 5 years, which one would you take? Whether it's a young squad or, hell, LeBron playing another five and keeping it at a high level, just who would you invest in like a stock? Who would you invest in right now?
Let me just ask this question. Does winning in the regular season count, or does it all determine on playoff success? That's a big deal. Like, I can give you a lot of good young teams that can play in the regular season.
Sure.
But I'm talking about winning it all.
You're saying
winning it all is like the ultimate payoff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So a young team and is it in 5 years or year one, year two, year three, you add them all up together?
Add them all up. The most success you could possibly have, and obviously championships.
Wherever
at the top.
LeBron is. I like LeBron, wherever he's at.
Is he going to do another five? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a easy chance. Let's go past that, right?
Okay.
I would love to see what Dallas does this offseason.
Sure.
I want to see what they do because obviously they have the star. I'm really curious. Next five, I don't know if I'd buy Oklahoma City, but I might be buying Oklahoma City if you told me next seven, like with their situation and their situation to really improve with the picks. Yeah, and especially this year. And then, but I would still bet on Boston and Miami and, you know, give me those Steady Eddies, the Lakers, give me all those. I'd bet on a lot of them. The Knicks are an interesting one as well because they have cap space.
Porzingis or Jaren Jackson?
Oh, Jaren, come on, man. Don't ask questions like that, man. You're just making sure, man.
Yeah, it's looking shaky with Porzingis, isn't it?
I don't know about it. I think he's still a good player, but he's not. Those are different levels.
Not what he was billed as.
You're asking the wrong guy because I love Jaren Jackson Jr. I'm the wrong guy to ask. I had him high, like super high after the 10th game I've watched him play. So you're asking the wrong guy. Go ask somebody that doesn't watch Memphis.
I just want to make sure the Grizzlies had two and Dallas has got one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but Dallas is one is damn good though.
Cuban's always a player in free agency. That's the problem.
Very true. Very true.
Hey, Scal, man,
you are the best, brother.
Great stuff
Thank
as
you.
Always. We appreciate the time, man.
You got it.
He is Brian Scalabrine, NBA insider for Odyssey.com. Always do appreciate his time. Those calls are brought to you by the Dell Technology Small Business Pod for 2.0 podcast series available on Odyssey.com/Dell. We will.